Welcome to She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine, a podcast made just for you. Your host is Felicia Stitzel, world traveler and influencer, professional photographer, sommelier, Navy veteran, and mom. Tune in every Thursday for solo episodes where she shares her life story and a wine highlight. Pour yourself a glass and let's dive in. Welcome to an episode of She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine. I appreciate you joining me this week as we continue our journey through season two and around the world. In this episode, I'm going to be highlighting a wine from France. This particular wine, I was very blessed to actually be able to go and visit this winery last summer, actually a year ago, so July 2020, which, believe it or not, yes, I was able to travel a little bit through 2020 around Europe. It wasn't much, and we road tripped everywhere. So this was during mine and my daughter's grand road trip from the utmost tippiest southern point, basically, of Spain, going all the way up to the tippiest, toppest north of France, almost. And of course, what lies right there in the middle is the beautiful region of Bordeaux. So the wine that I have chosen is from Chateau La Louvière. It's a Sauvignon Blanc and a Semillon blend, which those are two very primary grapes when you have a Bordeaux white blend. This is from the Graves region with the Pessac Lézion. I'm totally butchering those, so I apologize. I swear I'm getting better. But it is a typical and then not so typical Bordeaux white wine. So going into it. Now this wine and white wines from this region, because of the heavy amounts of the Sauvignon Blanc and how the region affects that grape, it does normally have a lot of acidity on it. So because I know that, I have chilled this wine all day, and I am serving it right out of the fridge. So it is very, very cold right now. So I recommend that if you get this wine, you need to serve it cold, drink it cold. The flavor totally changes for these wines when they get warmer. I have had a bottle of a wine similar to this from the same region, not from this producer. And it was, when it got warmer, the flavors just completely changed. So, just off the nose, you can smell all of these amazing flavors. There's citrus, and then there's like white blossoming flowers and peaches and a little bit of like coal. It's like wet stone. You know how you get that minerally smell off of like gravel and stones after it's rained? It smells really, really like that. You can definitely already tell, though, that citrus is really, really strong. So I'm assuming that the acidity on this is going to be pretty much on point from what I am accustomed to tasting from this region for the whites and the white blends. Okay, is not as acidic as I was expecting. It's actually really, really light, which, considering that this is a 13.5% alcohol, which considers it a medium to medium full bodied white wine, that's pretty impressive, actually. I still do get high, not super high levels like what I was expecting, but higher levels of acidity. So I'm getting that like salivation and the puckering in the back of my jaw like we've talked about in previous episodes. But the flavors are so good. Like, it's so refreshing. And considering how the weather has been here in the south of Spain for the last couple days, it has been rough. Super rough. It has been in the hundreds all weekend. And so having a nice, light, crisp, refreshing white wine like this on a hot day, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better combination than that. It does have like an aftertaste of vanilla even on the flavor, which means that it was probably aged in either French oak or American barrels. I'm going to go with French oak. And the overall flavor on it, though, I mean, it has grapefruit and it has a little bit of like the tangerine orange, where you get a little hint of sweet, a little hint of sour. I think that it has some honey on it, actually. Like it has a little bit of honey, like a honey melon or like one of those honeydew apples. A lot of fruit flavors on this. I mean, like I'm getting pear and apple and, like I said, a little bit of that stony flavor, so that mineral-esque-ness to it. Overall, though, really, really great wine. I'm so glad that I picked this one up. Funny story about when I actually went and visited, of course, in the midst of COVID, which was terrible. I was going to, of course, continue my education in wine and to be tasting through some of, you know, one of the world's most renowned areas or most well-known areas for wine in France. Everybody knows about Bordeaux wine in France. Even if you don't drink wine, you still know. And I was so excited and I had all these big high hopes and aspirations of all these different wines I was going to be able to try. And we had booked a couple days there and it was going to be awesome. Wrong. It was still awesome. I would highly recommend going to Bordeaux. A big key point for me was I really wanted to go to the wine museum there. It's amazing. And even really, really fun for kids to go to because it's actually an interactive museum. So that's really, really fun. I'll send you, if you guys check out the show notes, you can find the link to the wine museum in Bordeaux in the show notes. But my ultimate goal, though, of course, in this wine world that I live in, I wanted to taste more. I wanted to understand about these producers and to really experience for myself this right bank versus left bank and the flavors differences and the compositions that these wines have and the differences between them and everything. I wanted to learn everything. I wanted to get my hands in the soil. I wanted to get my hands around a glass of wine from here. I mean, I wanted it all. And I did not know because, of course, traveling around the world, drinking wine, and just kind of showing up to most of these places, it didn't really occur to me to make reservations. And it didn't really occur to me that there might only be places open if you have an appointment or if you are on a tour, which I wasn't either. So we ended up driving around, my daughter and I, we ended up driving around to, I think, 9 wineries total in, I think, the 2 days that we were there. And I only got to taste wines at 3. And so this particular chateau is actually one of the wineries I got a taste at. And what was nice though is that they actually own, you know, it's kind of a conglomerate family of wineries. And so I was actually able to purchase other wines from some of their other locations. I was able to learn more about a lot of places in a small area from a lot of different winemakers, but the grapes and the land are all owned by this, you know, family conglomerate of wineries. I ended up probably stocking up more there than most places that I had stopped at. Besides the wine shop that I stopped at too. It has like this crazy amazing spiral staircase, like a library of wines, and it's just the most beautiful thing. I'll have to send you guys the and that link to that location in the show notes as well. It's beautiful. Anyways, so now that we have discussed the wine and the story behind how I got this wine, let's dive into the story that I'll be sharing with you today. In 2016, I was on a crazy adventure. If you've been listening to this podcast for a little while, you will have heard ins and outs of this crazy escapade that I was on. And in March and April, I was no longer traveling around the country for my job, being a chase vehicle for a motorcycle celebrity of sorts. But my job was to be the chase vehicle and the project or the marketing manager and the road crew manager and a little bit of everything. So I had gotten off the road with him right after my birthday in April. And I went down to Florida. I met up with my husband there before we ended up going to our next duty station in Idaho. And that was the first time that in my whole life, I was on pause from school when I was getting my bachelor's degree. I had taken some time off from my online courses. I wasn't working. This is my first time since I was 11. I didn't have a job or prospects of a job. And I just was floating. I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing with my life. I was really lost for a long time. On my way, though, from Florida to Idaho, I took this crazy, crazy opposite detour route because I figured I had the time. You know, my husband was getting to Idaho and he's getting the house set up and he was getting checked in with his new job for the military and everything that he needed to get done. And since I didn't have any driving reason and deadline to get to Idaho, I figured I would take my sweet time. So I left Florida, drove up the East Coast, made a few stops along the way in Georgia and North Carolina, and then stopped in Virginia for a few days. And every single time I stopped somewhere, I was meeting up with either friends from Alaska or friends from the Navy, which was really cool. And then went from Virginia to Tennessee, Tennessee to Texas. Had to make two stops in Texas because it is such a big country, state, or it's, I hate driving across Texas. I like Texas. I just hate driving across it by myself. It's terrible. So drove across Texas and then went up, hit New Mexico, Four Corners, through Utah, up into Idaho. That was my route. And it was when I was driving through Utah that I had this really, really cool moment. If you've ever been to Utah, you will know that there are a ton of national parks there. And one of my favorites, though, that I actually had visited several times while living in Idaho was visiting the Arches National Park. Beautiful, amazing hikes, awesome views, natural landscape that takes your breath away, either from the view or from the heat, depending on what time of year you go. And it's just one of those places that you really can just go and get lost, although you shouldn't actually get lost. You just metaphorically get lost. And I figured since I was already seemingly lost, I might just lose myself a little bit more in this landscape. So I was driving through, and at this point, like, I was so close to being done with this road trip that I had some pressing information I needed to share with my husband, because on this trip is when I found out that I was pregnant with my daughter, and I couldn't tell anybody, like, at all. I was stuck not telling anybody the biggest news ever of being pregnant, and I couldn't say anything to anybody, and I was trapped in a car for days after I found out. It was terrible. Anyway, so I needed to get out and stretch my legs, though. I had been hardcore driving my nuts off. I mean, I was just pedal to the metal for as long as I could last. And then finally, I would take a break, stretch my legs, find a place to go to the bathroom, refill my water, everything that I needed to do to take a break. And then I would hit the road again for another, you know, 8 hours. So when I finally got to Utah, I was exhausted from this pedal to the metal. After I hit Four Corners, as soon as I got done with that, like, I was done. I needed to be off the road. I needed to be home. I needed to get a real shower and sleep in a real bed for a couple days, and then everything would be okay. But I've always loved the slogan going into Utah's, life elevated. And of course, I mean, if anybody has been to Utah, then you know why, because they have all these beautiful mountain ranges and hills and landscapes that is just amazing. But it's not always about the landscape. You know, it's a mindset. It's how you want to live your life, living elevated. And it was actually, so stopped in Arches National Park and went and hiked up to one of the arches just to, you know, get my blood moving and to stretch my legs for a little bit and, you know, smell the roses and all that stuff. So I had gotten out and just taking in this beautiful landscape when I actually met some people who were up there, and these were all locals, but these weren't just locals like they live in Utah. These were Navajo Indians, and they actually shared something very interesting with me. So in around Arches National Park, there is the Uti tribe, which means people of the mountains. And when the Navajo Indians were actually used to be referred to by the Apaches as, and I'm going to apologize, I'm going to butcher this one too, but I'll put it in parentheses in the show notes so you can look it up, is Yatua, meaning the one that is higher up. And when the Europeans, of course, were coming through Utah, there, of course, was some translation issues. And so they misunderstood this Utah, and they misunderstood the term. They didn't understand what they were saying. And so the Navajos, the Utes of this tribe, the whole state ended up being called Utah based off of this whole thing. Like, because the Utes, Utah, apparently this is the story that I was told while we were sitting up there. They were living on a whole other elevated lifestyle, if you understand what I mean, and they were sharing the story. So I didn't do any fact checks on this one until much later, but yes, there is actually a version of that story that is actually historically accurate about there was translation issues and the understanding of the Europeans who were here or who were coming through on their way to the West, claiming up as much gold as they could, and everything else that was going on during that time of Americans' history was every territory and every area needed a name. And if you can't understand the language for the locals who are living there, then yeah, that's how things happen. Actually, there's a funny story about Alaska that has that too, but that's just because that was a sailor who couldn't read. So that's not as common or than is. I'm not going to say anything bad about sailors because I am one and I'm married to one, but it's not. Yeah. We're going to move on from that one. But it was during this whole adventure that I really had this dawning moment. And I love stories like that. And I think, you know, part of this is all being triggered by how I had just had at Four Corners. At Four Corners, the National Monument, they normally have like a bunch of vendors that are out there. You can go stand on all four corners at the monument, and then you can actually go and do some shopping as well from some of the local artists. It's actually some of the local artists who told me that the monument's in the wrong spot. Like, it's actually like 40 feet like the other direction or something like that. I, once again, don't know if that's actually true or not, but it is funny that they would say that. And when I was there just actually earlier that morning, I had had a conversation with somebody, and he was a Navajo gentleman, amazing artist. He has all these beautiful Coco Pelli paintings that I still have today. And he asked where I was from. And of course, I'm very, very proud when I say I'm from Alaska. And he goes, really? What part? And he goes, do you know your tribe? He goes, are you like from Alaska or do you come from Alaska? And I was like, well, what's the difference between the two? And he goes, being from Alaska, like that means you are of the land, like you are claiming Alaska, you are from the land. Or do you come from Alaska, like you just were raised there and that's the last place you call home? It's like, oh, it's like, well, I'm from Alaska, like born and bred, raised, the whole deal. And he goes, okay, do you know your tribe? I was like, well, my area of Alaska is I'm in the Athabascan tribe. Obviously not me myself because I'm not native, but I have been kind of like my family have been adopted kind of by love by the parts of the Athabascan tribes that are surrounding Fairbanks, Alaska. But I was like, you know, I'm in the Athabascans or with the Athabascans. He goes, oh, do you know we're cousins? Excuse me? And he tells me this whole huge long history about how when the Russians had come and taken over Alaska and were pillaging and plundering it, the natives, and basically they were pirating them for the most part, taking all of their supplies. One of the tribes, the Athabascans, they had sent some of their, you know, brothers and their families to go find them another place to settle because they were tired of being persecuted. They were tired of having everything taken from them. They wanted to go find a new home. And the families that left, they ended up leaving and never coming back. They never came back for their Athabascan families and their brothers. They left and they made a whole new home for themselves. And then they are the Navajo. And I had no idea about this. And so actually, when I ended up bringing this story up to my mom, who has been working with tribes in Alaska for basically as long as I can remember, I asked her if she'd ever heard of that. And she goes, yeah, that's actually very factual. And there was a whole reunion where like they came together for the first time and they forgave each other and they have rebonded as family. And it was this huge, huge deal. And I was like, where was I for all of this? Like, good Lord. I feel like that's kind of a big piece of our history that I should have known but didn't know. And I'm ashamed that I didn't know. But during this road trip, I always think that it's interesting that especially this one. This one for me was, I spent thousands of miles just soul searching and having lots of conversations with myself and the windshield. And how did I get to this point? And how, if, when, what, how, what? Like, there's a lot of time by yourself that you need to process things, especially since everything just kind of fell apart all at once. I had spent a lot of time thinking over those 2 weeks that I was driving cross country. And this kind of goes back to previous episodes, even in this season. And it's there's a time for everything. And sometimes things are messy. And sometimes in that mess is when something amazing happens. But you know what? Like, life is scary. It's hectic and unpredictable and, is it unreliable. And what's funny, though, is that I'm piggybacking on this story now, which was, this was 5 years ago, and how things come in full circle. Because as of today, I actually put in my 2 week notice with my 9-to-5 job because I started seeing that this was not a life I wanted to build for myself. I was the operations director and project manager, and I was in charge of teams. And it sounds all really great, but when it came down to it, like, I had wanted to create this life of, working from home so that way I could still have a career when my husband gets moved every few years, and I can be at home with my daughter, and I can focus and spend time with her, and all of the great things that people think that working from home looks like. Like, I wanted that. And then, of course, there's still reality. Like, if you want that life, like, you still actually still have to work, though, right? And over the last couple months, actually, just 2 months, 6 weeks, give or take. It hasn't even been that long that I took over as the operations manager and partner of this company. And I told my partner today that I'm walking away. And most people would think that's crazy because I've been building up something like really great for myself with a social media company. But to me, like, life is so unpredictable, but it's so amazing at the same time. Obviously, but it's one of those moments where you're just like, wow, I'm either a genius or I'm a freaking idiot for giving that up. And I'm still wondering, but honestly, it was when there was something crazy that had happened with work. I had been glued to my computer all day. All my daughter wanted to do was play baking with her Play-Doh with me. And I was picking up all the pieces and fixing everybody's problems and everybody's mess. And I was getting harassed by clients and all of the things that people don't tell you when you work with clients. At least with me. I don't know if it's the same for everybody working with clients, but this particular company, I've dealt with that a lot with their clients. And I had had another bomb drop on me where I had to come in and I had to pick up the pieces and I had to take up extra amounts of work and I had to pick up everybody's extra slack. And that was my breaking point. And I literally, my daughter had done something little, and this is not a proud parenting moment for me, but she'd done something little then, and I just went off. And it was like, I wasn't even screaming at her because I actually wasn't directing anything her way. when I was just yelling around the house in general, just screaming about how, like, oh yeah, I have to come in again, like picking up the pieces because I have to fix everybody else's problems. And just, I mean, breaking point. And I thought to myself, what on God's green earth am I doing this for? And because I'll tell you what, like the pay was not compensating for the amount of time and dedication that it was getting out of me. And, you know, my husband's getting ready to deploy again, which means that I was notorious this last two patrols that he has left on about staying up until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning doing work and then going to sleep, turning around, waking up at 7:30, 8 o'clock, taking care of my daughter and then turning around and doing it all over again. Like, and that's exhausting. That is a toxic environment. And it's like, you know, I love my boss. And when things aren't hitting the fan in every single thesis way, I loved what I was doing. I loved the management and I loved the project and I loved the organizing. But it was just that moment where I was like, okay, I could stick through this and hopefully this turns out to being something great in the long run. Or I can cut my losses and start doing something for myself, something I want to do, something I enjoy doing, something that, you know, is just mine. I don't have to rely on anybody else. And if I want to build it the way that I want to build it and the way that I'm being taught by experts to help build it, then I can do something for myself. And then I can have this life and I can have my cake and eat it too. And I know that's not the way that it is for everybody. My husband and I had a very long discussion over this last weekend about how, you know, he is not a self, like, motivated person. Like, he needs to have a boss. He needs to have a sense of direction. He needs to have somebody kind of not so much telling him what to do, but he needs a structure. He needs a hierarchy, which is, I mean, it's perfect that he's in the military. Me, I have always been this, you know, driving, self-motivated individual. Thank goodness. And, you know, I just had that line go through my head. And this is the same thing that had happened to me 5 years ago at the same moment where here I am in Utah, just having these moments where, you know, life hits you and you spend all this time thinking and wondering and searching and everything else in between. And then something just happens. And, you know, I grew up a lot hearing about how it's not how hard you fall, but it's what you do when you stand. And, you know, there's a very good chance that if I, you know, building out this, I'll announce it to you guys soon, but I need to finish formulating a few things. So stay tuned for a big announcement coming. But it's one of those moments where it's like, you know, I could fall and smash my face on the ground with this endeavor. I could. It's very probable and very possible. I mean, it is, let's be honest. Like, I fully understand this. But even if I fall and if I don't succeed in this endeavor, at least I know I would have done it the right way. And I would have built something for myself the way that I wanted it to be. And if I fall, that's okay too. At least I tried. Because I'll tell you what, this endeavor is quite scary for me because it's totally out of my element. But it gets back to that moment. It's like, live your dreams. Don't let anyone tell you what you're capable of doing or let the words of others dictate how you live your life and how your dreams are lived and come to fruition. You are the only one who can live your life. And always, always dream like stars are like right within your grasp, but the moon is way too close. Because the only limit that you should ever face is the ones that you've put on yourself. I mean, true statement though, because if you think about all of the things that you could do and you can accomplish, and you look back and you think, what was holding me back? Is anything? And if not, that's amazing. I need to take notes from you. Because most people have something holding them back like that. And it could be fear. It could be, you know, that whole fear of the unknown, the fear of failing, the fear of falling, the fear of you trust yourself too much or you overcompensate too much and then it all blows up in your face. The fear of not having a steady income because that's freaking terrifying. There's all of these things and all these fears that you could have, and those fears then turn around and control your life. You know, I talked about this last week. And man, it is so releasing for me. Like just the amount of anxiety that I'm not carrying on me over this last weekend, going into this week, knowing that I'm taking back control of my life and the way that I wanted to live it. Because life is too short, y'all. And that was one thing that, of course, this crazy story about my time that I was driving through in Utah, of these crazy coincidences and these histories and these, you know, relationships and these stories. Like, you know, the Athabascans and the Navajo, like, they probably had no idea if they were ever going to see each other again or speak it to each other again. From those tribes that they had originally left generations later, where I'm sure there was probably some bitterness that was built up between tribes and some animosity. But here they are, you know, decades later and generations later, making amends. Like you have no idea where life is going to take you. Man, ride that roller coaster because it's going to be something amazing. And if you want to live your life on your terms, instead of having somebody else dictate when you should be happy, how you should be happy. I actually just restarted watching Emily in Paris on Netflix because I'm dying to get the next season coming out on Netflix, but it's not there yet. So I figured I'd rewatch it. And I was in, I think it's the second episode where she's sitting at this little cafe looking out at the river and one of her coworkers comes up and sees her and he has this nice conversation with her. And he even says, you know, she's talking about how like success in her job makes her happy. And he goes, maybe you don't know how to be happy. And of course she says it's, you know, very presumptuous of you to think that. It's a little arrogant. And he's like, okay, like, but you know, it's the atmosphere that I'm very thankful I also live around. It's not just the French, but also the Spanish. And most of Europe is, you know, they don't live to work. They work to live. Their life out here, which is part of the reason why I love it so much, is because they do what they need to do in order to take care of themselves and their family and keep a roof over their heads. Like they do enough. And of course, you're always going to have people who are driven and motivated to do their own thing and da 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 da. Yeah, I get that. And it's not like everybody here is just a follower either, obviously. But they don't let life pass them by because they're too busy focusing on what they think is what's going to pay off for them, like a promotion. If you worked 100 hours in a week, man, your boss is really going to notice you, but you have no social life. You don't even remember the last time you ate because you've been working so hard and you get so wrapped up in your job. And that's one of those things that I also thought about when I was driving cross country, funny story, 5 years ago. And I sat there and I just, all these things that I was contemplating, like who is going to define your success? Is it your bank account? Is it your job title when you hand out your business card? Is it bragging amongst your peers? Is it your big house that you bought without having to finance? What to you is the definition of success? I'm going to let that one resonate with you guys for a little bit, but I hope you guys enjoyed this story. Truly think about what that is. What does it mean to you to have a successful life? How do you see somebody being successful or to have success? I'd love it if you guys would share that either on social media or in the show notes or comments, reviews, whatever. Love to hear you guys' feedback on that. But until then, Please stay tuned for more stories coming up every Thursday that we release another episode of She's Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine. I'd love it if you guys would give me your reviews. If you guys have tried any of the wines that I have selected and have been tasting through over the last two seasons, I would love to hear you guys' feedback on how you feel the wines tasted and if they were, not to say accurate because everybody's taste buds are different, but if you got a good enough sense of the wine from what I had described it. Also, feel free to follow the story daily on my social media channels. I'll have all my links below in the show notes, as well as the information for the wine, the winery, the wine museum in Bordeaux, and of course, all the words that I probably messed up throughout the episode. But I appreciate you guys joining me every week for another episode. Stay tuned.